Horror Podcast. This is your weekly podcast for movies and all kinds of other things, but mostly movies. And joining me, as usual, is my co-host, Eric Sayor.
Hi.
And we are returning to the world of impossible missions and espionage in our Mission Impossible 3 and 4 episode. Eric, are you excited?
Yes, I'm excited. I liked both those movies a lot. I was just trying to say that I like them probably more than those we talked about last week, even though the first one is pretty good. But
yeah.
Those are just very fun movies and also good.
I think the average was brought down quite a bit.
Yeah.
By one of the movies that we discussed.
Yeah. Let's get straight into 3, because I think 3 gets a bad rap because it is a bit cheesy and a bit a bit too much in the way the first one and the two most recent ones aren't, but it is always good.
Right.
And in a good way. It's never, you're never bored and you're never cringing.
Right. And there's a... And I think that this might have been my problem for all these years. The plot of this movie and the plot of 2 aren't that different. Which I think is a big part of why this one might not be as well liked. Like, if you break it down, I can't even remember the name. The Chimera virus and the rabbit's foot aren't that different. And there's a sequence where Ethan is stealing from a pharmaceutical company, and then there's a sequence where he's stealing from a Chinese military corporation thing. I don't know what to call it. I think that that's partially why some people don't like them, because they think that they're the same movie.
but all these movies do have like a world-ending MacGuffin thing that they're trying to get back. Like, it's always, and Ethan steals it first, and then tries to trick the guy at the end. The first movie is like that too, and even the fourth kind of.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but this one leans into the MacGuffin like hard, like.
Yeah. But I think it works because it's so tied to its villain.
Mm-hmm.
And the villain is the best part of this film. This film is great just because it has Philip Seymour Hoffman as a great villain, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a really intimidating character. And I think what makes him... One of the things that makes him most just terrifying is that he's a businessman. He's just like he's not really like malicious in a weird way. He's just like cold and calculating, like, this is my job, this is what I do, so I have no real feelings in this is just a thing
he's an evil guy doing his evil job, but that's it. Like, he's very just very very competent at being a villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's no, like, there's nothing really personal in it, really. Like, even when he's torturing Ethan's wife, it's part of the job. It's part of what I do. He's so competent in it that he's able to hear Ethan's name through the sound of the wind going into his ears. But it's like, this is how I do things. And he has this swagger to him that I really enjoyed.
Like, Philip Seymour Hoffman just has that like presence and charisma that just works very well on screen. Like, he has a real strong presence, and that feels kind of intimidating in whatever he's playing. Like, he even when he's playing like if you watch like Cynic Doc New York, where he plays like a very sad like theater writer that's just looking for existence. He still like feels like a grand character with, like I said, like that just takes you with him on, like you're just, all your attention is always on him when he's on screen.
Yes. Yeah, same goes for Capote, for those who have seen that film.
Like, I haven't seen that.
He's magnetic in that film. And that's just, that's what we lost when he died, like this. This
one of the charisma. Greatest actor of the last few years. Like if you watch The Master, you always believe that he works as a cult leader because just his presence is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's just one of those, he's one of those performers where even in movies where the movie overall might not be that great, he always brings something interesting into it. Which is always nice. He's really good at this movie. I don't know what else to say. And this is a movie that I think I was down on before rewatching it. And there are lots of things about it. It's like, oh, I really like this. And this movie feels like it's actually more of a callback to the first one than any of the other movies. It has more in common with it, at least, I would say, in terms of tone. Obviously, it's not J.J. Abrams trying to copy De Palma, because that would just be really weird. I don't think he could pull it off. But it does feel like it's trying to match what that first movie was setting up, even down to the fact that the opening credits aren't that different from the first one compared to like even 4 and 5, which really try to amp it up. Like it's the same format just with the events of this movie instead.
And just this, like we talked about last time, that this movie feels very much of its time and how it's shot and the camera and the colors, but I do think it looks pretty good. Like I like it has that color scheme and that aesthetic of like mid-2000 action films, like David Fincher-esque aesthetic, like early David Fincher. I think it does it well. I think it's never ugly, and it hasn't like badly aged like some of those films have.
Yes, it's aged pretty well. It is the most 2005 movie that I've ever seen, though.
Like, another movie we talked about on this show that I remember seeing that same aesthetic kind of, but it looked really worse, was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is still a really good movie because of the performance and the writing, but like the look, it doesn't look good. And those are similar-ish in like their color tones.
Definitely. That sort of, that bleached out look that comes from bleach processing. It's just, it does feel like a very particular moment in film and filmmaking. And it dates it in an interesting way. And I think that that's something I do like about this franchise, is that every movie does feel like the moment that it was made in up until the more recent ones. And
but even the most recent ones, like like Ghost Protocol feels very early 2010s, and like, oh yeah, we finally got how to do color grading really well, and like you can make an action movie that's stylized and funny and a team thing. And Rogue Nation feels like peak action movie that we've reached finally.
Rogue Nation feels like a Fast and the Furious movie quite a bit, in a lot of different ways. And 4 feels like a very strong action adventure movie. It does I guess continue.
Yeah.
Throughout these films.
Let's talk maybe about the story a bit. Like, I like that it starts and he's just married and living the family life. And
Well, first it starts with the end.
Oh, yeah.
It does start, and that's something that I forgot that they did. And if you watched it and stopped it because you were like, they just start right in the middle of the movie. I must have, something's wrong with my DVD player or my stream. No, they start like with him torturing Michelle Monaghan. And it's just I think that's a really strong way to start the movie. I would.
Yeah, it sells you immediately on Philip Seymour Hoffman and how dangerous he is. It sells you on their relationship, like how they're just through looking each other. Mm-hmm. Even though you like how he's talking to who he believes is his wife, and we believe it too.
Mm-hmm.
It does both those things that it has to do. It does them really well.
Yeah,
and then we get the intro.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to the sort of him settling down and him being the perfect husband, I guess. Which I thought was funny. I thought that was really funny the way that was handled, where it's like he's just a perfect guy, but he's kind of boring to anybody that's not a woman also.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
I took note of a quote that's just another lady that's like, and I've married him too.
Yeah, I totally marry him.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. And Greg Grunberg is like rolling his eyes like, he's such a bore. But that was really well done. That was a very well done scene. But I like that, like, he's in the other room and he remembers exactly like where they went on vacation or something like that. But yeah, like it's interesting the way that whole party is handled, and the family speeches, and I think it does a good job of making you think that this makes sense, like that he would have a family, at this point.
It does introduce his superpower in the film, which is reading lips. Mm-hmm. It's like two times after that, I think.
I did not connect that, but that's a good point.
Like I don't think he reads lips before this film, and mm-hmm. then you have this scene of his wife talking with her friends about a leak, and then the zoom on the lips, and you understand he's reading them and just like yelling to them, "Oh yeah, we went to that leak."
Right. Yeah, and I think one of the most interesting parts of this movie is this is the movie where Ethan Hunt is almost a superhero. Just like the number of things that he's able to do that he's not necessarily able to do in later movies or in previous movies that he's just perfect at. Like he starts doing like algebra when he's trying to figure out how to get into that building and like serious like math equations.
He seems like ultra competent in comparison mm-hmm. to the two previous films. Like then you learn the girl he trained is captured in Berlin and he has to go save her with a team, and we talked about the team later maybe, but that scene feels like very military in a way the previous two mm-hmm. movies don't, like very professional, like what you'd see in a modern like military film.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like they're all
yeah. It's very Zero Dark Thirty.
Almost. Yeah, they're not. They're all like in two. They don't know how to hold guns.
Mm-hmm.
And one, there's just one gun throughout the whole film.
Yeah, that's true. Well, like even in the first one, they're like Cold War spies.
Yeah,
and it's much more like, you know, trying to get a piece of information from one place to the other. In this one, they're just like Black Ops soldiers, which is a different direction. So, I think it sort of, you know, when a lot of people say that this is the movie where they really started to change direction, not really. This is, again, this is the last movie where it's like every director's just doing their own thing with this.
This is the last movie where they don't know what they're doing. But it has traces of what those movies become, and I think it's very good. But I think it feels like there's more care in those action scenes than in mm-hmm. the John Woo film.
Yes, there's far more. There's a loving hand at work in making sure that those action scenes look really good and that they work really well. And I think that they do. Even Luther has a lot to do in terms of action in this movie compared to the previous ones, which was interesting. But he does a good job with what he does do. He even does the diving thing where he goes into that pipe, which is pretty cool.
And we're introduced to the first part of what becomes his one of the part of his future team, which is Simon Pegg. Pegg is really young and pretty good.
Yeah, fresh off of Shaun of the Dead, probably, most likely. But yeah, he's in this, and it was I was happy when he came back for 4. I was like, yeah, he gets to be on the team now. But yeah, he's introduced. Who else? They introduced Michelle Monaghan, who's shockingly become a staple. I was surprised that she continued to be his wife after this movie. Those are sort of the main people that come with, I guess.
I don't remember 5 at all. I'm very excited to see it. Is she in 5?
Yeah, she is. She's in 5. I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember. She's at the end of 4, but I don't...
There's a scene of him and her.
5, I remember vividly. I'm very excited to rewatch this film and talk about it. But so yeah, I do like his team of Jonathan Rhys-Meyers and Maggie Q.
Mm-hmm.
They're good.
Mm-hmm.
They're a good team. I think it fits and I think they work way more than in 2 and 1. It's the first movie where it feels like he has a team that you like and you care about, and you're like, oh yeah, I like these guys working together.
Yeah, well, so the first one, it's all about the team sort of being destroyed. So he has to build a team out of leftover spare parts. And then 2, he doesn't have a team. Luther is there, an Australian dude. And
Tandy Newton, with whom he has no chemistry.
Yep. So it's not really a team. Yeah. The bad guy has a team.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have a team. but this is the first one where it seems like the team is really a big part of it, but it still does lean on him, and it's weird because it's very obvious that they're still experimenting with what this franchise is supposed to be. So when there's the camera shot of the camera zooming in on Tom Cruise as he's gotten over the Vatican wall, and he makes some sort of joke that I can't remember, but it's just it's a weird line about isn't it shocking that I made it up this wall or something along that tone. But it's just very weird. They don't know what they want this to be. They don't know how much they're winking at the camera yet. But at the same time, things like the Shanghai heist, which is that set up what these movies will become. That's where the Burj Khalifa scene comes from. That's where the airplane scene comes from, where he's hanging outside the door in 5. It's very clear that he had this idea very early on. This whole thing of I want to do real stunts that human beings shouldn't be able to do.
And I wanted them to look very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at the cast. Did you know Aaron Paul is in this film?
Yeah, I did. It was very weird. I thought he was Justin Chatwin, though.
Yeah.
Which he could have been. But yeah, that was really, really weird that he was in the movie. There's a couple others. Eddie Marson, who's a British actor. And if you see him, he's become one of those guys who's in, everything. He's in... what was it? The World's End as well.
Yeah.
Played kind of a good version of the same character, but yeah. Carrie Russell is also
Carrie Russell is the I just noticed her because people were just talking about her a lot because she's probably going to be in the next Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Carrie Russell, who just came off of The Americans, which I hadn't seen the last 2 seasons, but the seasons I did watch are like some of the best TV that's been made in the last few years. So if you have, if you're really interested in spy stuff, go give that a look, because it's very good.
I like the last thing on the characters. I like Lawrence Fishburne being an asshole and the bait and switch. You think he's the bad guy, but it's not him. It's what's his name?
It's Musgrave. What's his real name though?
Billy Crudup.
Dr. Manhattan. He's Musgrave. And that's one of those, that plot element is one of the things where that's where I get my whole, this is the most sequel to one that we've ever gotten so far. Yeah. Like the idea that there's a twist and that, you know, there's sort of a, that you can't really trust everyone on screen.
You see his wife die, gets shot by Philip Seymour Hoffman, but no, it's not her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all very, very much things you could have seen in like a direct sequel to the first movie.
And this movie has like one very strong heist. Like when they literally steal Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's incredible. It's so good. And it's all timed very well. And I love like they stop the traffic with the Italian guy. And then he says, oh yeah, it works. Thank you. And everyone's happy. You know, they're just, all the Italians go from screaming to happy in like 5 seconds.
I love that so much. The Italian, they're just screaming at each other in Italian. Yeah. It's so good. And they have like a little switch to make it smoke. That was really good. I like that quite a bit.
They blow up the car. It's all like very well timed and very good. It's a good heist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Maggie Q, she's like, oh, but it's so good. But it's such a good car, such a nice car. And then he's like, that's why we do it though. And then, there's a lot of moments in this movie where you feel like the team is really a team. And I think that's what does make this movie work quite a bit, is that they do feel cohesive in a way that, like you said, the previous teams really didn't quite as well.
This made me wonder why I haven't seen Maggie Q actually in more stuff, and I guess she got into the wrong adult franchise. She's in Divergent.
God damn. Damn you, Divergent.
Divergent is just stealing stars from us. That and Maze Runner thing.
Maggie Q, it's interesting because Jonathan Rhys Meyers, he's been in stuff, a lot of stuff, but I would expect him to be a much bigger deal, and I would expect her to be a bigger deal.
I didn't want to get like distracted, but I'm just looking at the Divergent cast, and there's so many good actors in this film. So many people that got huge, like Miles Teller and Zoe Kravitz and Shailene Woodley, J. Courtney, Ansel Elgort, Kate Winslet.
It's pretty crazy.
let's not talk about that. Let's go back to the good movie.
Yeah, the movie that we both rather enjoyed and found very pleasant.
Yeah. Why do people not like this film? I don't get it.
I really think it comes down to people think that this is the second one. I think that they are so similar in plot elements that they just think it's the second movie and they have bad memories of that film. And I can see why they would think that they are the same thing.
In my head, they were both one and the same before watching them. Because I remember the beginning of 2 with him scaling the mountain. Mm-hmm. And I remember the ending of 3 and I thought those were the same film.
Yeah, so I think it's a thing.
I remember the thing on the roof, so.
Yeah, it's I think it's very much one of those things where the two movies, they came out sort of at the beginning of people starting to suspect Tom Cruise was crazy, and at the very peak of everybody thinks Tom Cruise is crazy. And I think that was also part of it. It's like, it's linked to the point in time where people most did not want to see Tom Cruise on screen. That's one of the main things that I think, hurt this movie in particular. I think it was saved by the fact that people knew Philip Seymour Hoffman is like a fantastic actor. I think that that actually really went a long way. And this movie, it did well enough that I think it's responsible for every J.J. Abrams movie.
it's you start with this film, I think you have a really good career ahead of you as you're an action, a big movie director, a blockbuster director. And I think J.J. Abrams is pretty good at that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Alex Kurtzman and Robert Orsi were brought on for the ride. Which, if you've listened to any enough episodes of After Dark, you know I am against that, but whatever. They did make some good movies. Suck.
Yeah, they made some good stuff.
But,
only the stuff with J.J. Abrams.
Basically, in, like, the first Transformers movie. After that, nothing. It's interesting. This movie is kind of the tipping point in a lot of people's careers. Like, it's the birth of J.J. and the Kurtzman and Orsi. It's kind of like a mini death for Tom, though, before he has to rise from the ashes and become the Tom we know today.
Yeah, the Tom everyone loves. Okay, maybe some other stuff. I like that they just get married at the hospital, like randomly, and then you have the joke with Ving Rhames, like, you should leave her, you should, it's never gonna work. And he's like, we got married. Oh, congratulations.
I love it so much. And those two, that's one of the great things about Ving Rhames being in all these movies, is that they have a lot of chemistry. So that scene really, really works, especially if you have, even if you had to sit through two, which again, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everyone who sat through two, but I think it will make your enjoyment of three even stronger, because they've built up such a good relationship. That scene is really good. Any of the real, like, character stuff, JJ nails, and the writers nail, and even, you know, it's not a big part of the movie, but even Jonathan Rhys Meyers and Maggie Q, they have sort of a thing going on in the background. And even that's played very sweet, and it's not pushed on the audience. But it works when they cut to it.
Like, I'd have liked them to continue on instead of Jeremy Renner.
That's
my piece.
I mean, yeah, I would definitely have preferred Jonathan Rhys Meyers. I mean, we'll get to that when we get to four, but I really like Paula Patton. If Michelle Monaghan weren't as good as she is, I would have liked her to come back. But Michelle Monaghan's freaking amazing. So what are you going to do? Both of them are really great. And I do think it would be great if either of them came back at some point.
Okay. Maybe something. I like that Michelle Monaghan just shoots the guy at the end. That's good.
Yeah,
that's a good ending. Like, she's the one that saves them.
I like that he just tells her everything. He's like, she's like, the Impossible Mission Force. Yes, that's what it's called. That's such a good human moment that really breaks everything back to reality. It is a great little bit.
I love the big heist with in China and Shanghai that like, you don't even get to see the part inside the building in like a very cool way, like the coolest moment. He just comes out with, I have it, I'm jumping out the window, and then he jumps. It's just a really strong moment.
It's pretty good.
And they use, like, baseball to distract the cards.
Yeah, there's a lot of bits in this movie that are really, really... God damn it. All the little moments.
Yeah. Very strong, like, both in terms of character and in terms of, like, cool action scenes. It was... Actually, really, really surprised when Billy Crudup turned out to be, like, Musgrave turned out to be a bad guy, and Lawrence Fishburne the good guy.
Yeah, that was very shocking, and again, a very, very in line with what the first movie was trying to do. Yeah, like, that was a very interesting reveal, and it's so well done. You're so ready to believe that Fishborn is the bad guy. And Musgrave does such an effective job of seeming like a strong ally, that when that's flipped, it's shocking, in a great way. Real quick, so how does Philip Seymour Hoffman die? Because I'm having a hard time remembering, which is a problem for me. And I watched it. I definitely watched the film, but I'm having a hard time actually remembering. At the end,
the killing blow, you mean?
Yeah, like...
Because they're just fighting and he's getting weaker and weaker.
Okay. That's right. I'm remembering this now. Because
I didn't take any note of what he used to kill him, but I know they're just fighting, he's getting weaker. But I think he gets the gun, maybe, and he shoots him.
Yeah, something. It's hard for me to remember. And I guess that, like, he's such a good villain that it doesn't matter. But, like, I mean, we'll talk about it with four. Like, I think the bad guy in that gets a really good comeuppance. It's pretty memorable. Yeah. Pretty well done. And I couldn't tell you.
I do like that they're just... He just dies in fight, you know? He's like a competent villain that has a grandiose plan. He's just like trying to do his things of selling weapons. He's a weapon seller, and they just fight and he dies, and that's it. It doesn't have to be like a boss fight.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's interesting, I guess.
Because the most important part isn't even him, it's his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's better than two where... He just gets, you think he's dead, and then he gets up, and then he gets, what was it, he gets shot in the head or something like that. I can't even remember it. Yeah. Anyways, I think we're good on three, unless there's anything else, because we kind of covered it.
Yeah. Let's move on to Brad Bird's Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Yeah?
I had it on in the background. Davian gets hit by a car.
Oh, yes! He just gets hit by a truck, I think?
Yes, it's like a big old truck van thing.
Just a random death. Like, he's about to kill him.
Actually, I love it now. I kind of. Yeah. I mean, it's very Orsay and Kurtzman. It's just like, it's all accidental and nothing matters, but still, I kind of love it now. Anyways, no, that's, yeah, four, let's go to four, directed by Brad Bird.
Yeah, it starts with a spy getting killed in a... Like, it starts like you're gonna watch another spy have his own film, and then he's just shot by a Jennifer Lawrence like.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, that counts, that works. I get to see it. He gets shot by, God, what is her name?
Leah Seydoux?
Leah Seydoux.
I love Leah Seydoux, I'm just joking. Yeah. In this movie, she looked a lot like Jennifer Lawrence. It's very weird.
I can see it, though. She looks a lot like Red Sparrow, Jennifer Lawrence, particularly.
Maybe that's why I just linked it in my mind. But, like, she's a great actress that I really like. I didn't want to make a bad joke about her. I'm sorry, Leah Seydoux, if you're listening.
I don't think she is, but...
But I have to say it.
I think you made up for it, though. No, she's my favorite part of Spectre, a movie that I absolutely love. Can you tell from the tone of my voice? But no, she's genuine. Even in movies where I don't like them, she is always a welcome.
In the Lobster, she's incredible.
I've heard that as well.
Have you not seen The Lobster?
No, I can't watch anything by that director. I'm just
no,
like, no. How? No, no thanks.
Have you watched any of his films? Am I gonna have to make a Yangos Lanthimos episode because I love his movies?
That'll be interesting.
You've not seen? No. What have you seen from him?
I haven't seen any of them actually. So to be fair, I'm judging them based off of word of mouth. But
I'm not kidding. You'd love Killing of a Sacred Deer. It's like your kind of like semi horror 1922 like.
Okay, I'll
just read a summary of it.
Yeah, I've heard. That's the thing. Like, the ideas behind every movie he's ever made, they've all seemed interesting, but I don't know. I will. Okay, this is a conversation for a different time. But
I'm very shocked. I like him a lot. I like his movie. I'm very excited for his Suspiria.
Yeah, that'll be interesting because I do not like the original Suspiria at all. So
I have not seen it.
It's certainly a movie made by an Italian man in the 1970s, to say the least. You can tell. Okay,
The Acid is good. Let's move on.
Yes, let's do that. It starts really strong. It starts as Josh Holloway. Yeah, Josh Holloway. Sawyer from Lost. I don't even know what that means, but I know people know who that is. He starts and you think you're watching his movie kind of, and then he gets taken out. And it's very fun and, you know, exciting. And then it goes to this Russian prison and this sequence that I really enjoyed this sequence watching this movie again, and it reminded me of how much I really like this movie as a big action blockbuster, a sort of adventure movie. It's just very fun from this moment till the very end, I would say.
Yeah, and Peg being just stunned at everything that Ethan Hunt is doing is very, it's very on point. Like, you're. Mm-hmm. The film is immediately funny, like almost immediately. That prison escape scene is both like a really good, cool action scene and just a cool on-screen moment. And you get Peg being Peg at his best.
Yeah, Peg is great, and Peg and his chemistry with Tom Cruise, even when they're not on screen together. Really strong, just Tom Cruise's physical acting and Peg, like, I know what that means, but I'm not going to open it. Like, that stuff's really strong. And this movie, from the very beginning, you get the sense that Ethan Hunt is competent, but again, he's not a superhero in this one. He's much more like the first movie, where he's a guy in a situation, and he has certain skills, and he has to sort of stretch to get out of the situation.
Yeah. He's always in danger when there's danger, but he's just really good. Like, he's just really competent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's being just like competent
that
enough.
Type of spy and action hero. I like that the movie moves very fast. Like, it moves straight from the prison to the Kremlin. And I like the phone goof a lot. Like, when he hangs up the phone, and this thing is going to destroy in 5 seconds, and it doesn't.
Yeah, it's really good. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
And then the Kremlin heist is also just a good heist that happens really fast in the film. Like, there's no extended planning. It's just happening in front of you. And I like the pacing of this movie a lot. It's just moving from set piece to set piece, always pulling you through. And when it stops for a character moment, it does it like it, you care always because you like those characters at this point.
Yeah. And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it takes the basic format of the blockbuster and just does it really well. Like,
yes.
It's very competent. It's never like super surprising. It's never like, it never does things quite differently. It's not like I like movies that uses the action that when the action scenes are indistinguishable from like the character growth scenes, but
yeah,
this doesn't really do that, but it does like it does what I want to see out of a big summer blockbuster at the very least. Like it's mm-hmm. it's a good one of those. Like it's a good bar. Like if it's like movies have, that reach that bar, always good.
Yes, yes, I agree with all of that. Like it's this sort of balancing act of having characters that are interesting and feel well-rounded and like they are real people, and making exciting action sequences and making those two things work together, rather than one being detrimental to the other. And it just does such a really good job of that. And it does, there are a lot of things that I think three starts that this picks up the ball with, like the tech. The tech feels very, I want to say it doesn't feel super realistic, but at the same time, it doesn't feel super cartoony or just like out of this world, like some of the tech in number two does, or even some of the stuff in one. Like it feels like things that you could actually have, you know, like that door rewriter thing. That feels like something that we could have in the near future, or when they're going down that hallway.
Yeah, the hallway thing is so cool that rewrites the. Mm-hmm. That scene, I think, it's very cool.
Yeah, yeah, and stuff like that, and like even like Simon Pegg's fake hand.
Yeah,
which is just so clever. Stuff like that really, really works. And also like the connection between the team. Again, this team. Despite Jeremy Renner, I think it's very cohesive.
Yeah, I think Jeremy Renner is good in this film. Like, it's something you can admit while still saying he's kind of an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think he works better in five, though, honestly.
Yeah, but I think as time has gone on, just being kind of an asshole isn't that bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As we've learned in recent years,
yeah.
Even just today.
In the last 6 months, like we've learned some bad shit. And I think Jeremy Renner is not the worst, but he's kind of, he's a shitty dude.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he is on the list of people where it's like, I want people to re-examine his comments and then have him get sucked into things. Because if you re-examine his comments from after Age of Ultron, I think people will be much more harsh on him. Because there are a couple people like that, though, where it's like, okay, we're not going to talk about that now. But anyways, yeah. There are people who, if they had said what they had said a couple years later, they would be in big trouble.
Okay, we don't like Jeremy Renner, would we accept that he's all right in this film? That's all we're going to say in this film.
Him. Yes, he's another Gary Oldman. Where were we? Oh, okay. The team is really, I think the team really works. Like I said earlier, I think Paula Patton is really good in this movie, and she's kind of, in a weird way, she's a lot like Maggie Q, where I'm like, why, what happened to her? Like, she was in a bunch of movies, and did Warcraft just, like, end things for her? Like...
Now that I remember, Maggie Q got Nikita for like 75 episodes.
Yeah,
so.
She did a TV show, but it was a CW show also.
Yeah. But yeah, still, like, if cool. You're leading your TV show for like four seasons or something, mm-hmm. I think you're doing all right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure she has like a very nice house, and I would love to go there and and have dinner. It sounds great. But yeah, like. Yeah.
Paula Patton also doing television. Somewhere between
Hot ABC. Oh, okay. So that's what happened. They both went to television.
What is, I like the Russian guy that's following them. Like, mm-hmm. That scene when he's trying to get out of the hospital and he's just on the ledge. And the Russian guy is just smoking a cigarette, waiting for him. He's just—they're just looking at each other, and it's really, really funny and really, really good.
Mm-hmm. They have a very good chemistry throughout the movie, and it's very. It feels like a throwback to like the Pink Panther or something. I don't know if you've ever seen any of those, but like the idea that there's another guy who's coming to get you while you're trying to complete this mission. Like, it has that feel to it, and I think it really works in this movie. And I like that he's a smart character who, at the end, when he finds Tom Cruise on the ground next to the launch suitcase or whatever, he's like, oh, so we're not enemies. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, this is the movie where Tom Cruise finally reaches Tom Cruise full potential, I think, as a charismatic movie star that has like a chemistry with everyone. Like, he's so charismatic that everyone works with him. Like, there's there's no relationship in that movie that with him included that just doesn't work, because he's too good at being that movie star with a good smile, you know?
Yeah, he's nailed it. to say the least. He's figured out what his shtick is, and he's aged into it so well. I think in an interesting way.
Yeah, it does make me a bit sad that, like, he's reached that thing where he's really, really good at being that star, but I don't know if we'll ever like get him in some weird stuff again, or he'll just be playing similar-ish roles. Like, he did that drug movie, American something, where just watching the trailer, you know what character he is. He's not, he's not the dude from Magnolia again.
Right. You know, that's a very good point. Like, there was a period where he was really doing some very interesting stuff, and he has maybe backed away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it's harder for him to do that. Probably because of the Church of Scientology. that probably has something to do with it. But yeah, no, that's a very interesting point to bring up. Like
when I heard he was almost cast in the Tarantino film, I was